This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Yeah, you heard me right. College Football Betting Podcast. It is February 11th as we hit record, and we are back, baby. Couple weeks off after the season ended. We let the NFL wrap up their season, and we're going to be rolling early this year. We're going to be getting a little unique, maybe a little NFL draft fodder. Love to bet the NFL draft. Do we throw in a little college basketball around March Madness? We'll see. But plenty of things to break down, and I'm just pumped to be back for another offseason. Last offseason, we started earlier than we ever had, and now we're going to be with you, hopefully, every single week moving forward from here until the start of the season. We are 199 days away from week zero. The week zero slate, is it robust? It's better than last year. We got some big boys in action. Hawaii at Stanford, North Carolina and TCU will play in Dublin, NC State, UVA down in Brazil, New Mexico State, Florida State, and Memphis, UNLV. That is your week zero slate. We've got some early lines out, so we got a whole lot to get to, not only on this podcast, but all throughout the offseason. So a couple of things from a housekeeping standpoint. Do hit us up via email, cfbpod@vsin.com, cfbpod@vsin.com. That comes right into my inbox. So if you have any things you want to hear from or guests you'd like to hear about, or you just want to yell at me, that's fine. You can email us. You can hit me up on Twitter @1TimMurray. We're on YouTube. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify. So let's continue to grow and let's have a bigger offseason than we have had in recent years. So a little housekeeping there. We are going to check in with Brad Powers coming up in just a little bit. He is the first person that came to mind for me when we had an offseason pod. All right, let's get Brad on, kind of go through his process and all of that. So looking forward to talking to Brad here in just a little bit. We did get an email from Jake just a couple days ago, and he said, thanks for the pod all year and giving some insight all year. I'm sure in one way or another, your pod helped me have Indiana 30-1 and Miami 28-1. I'm not going to take credit for that one. Maybe Humans could take some credit for Indiana because Humans did grab an Indiana future, but a hell of a cash there for you guys. And he said a couple of offseason ideas that he's looking for. Lessons learned from last season, schedule breakdowns, and portal. So portal is certainly massive. We will dive into that. Who's where and who got the biggest addition at the quarterback position. We'll go through some of the portal rankings. Schedule breakdowns is so massive with these mega conferences. So I think that's going to be a big process here throughout the offseason. And maybe we will go conference by conference and see which teams hit the schedule lottery and which teams did not fare all that well from a scheduling standpoint. So pumped to be back with you guys for the offseason, less than 200 days away from the start of the college football season. It feels like it just wrapped up, kind of did just wrap up. So Indiana, the champions. And unfortunately, I don't know if we're going to be getting a 200-1 price on Indiana ever again after they were able to take care of business like they did last season. So we're up and running. Good to be back here on the offseason podcast. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will welcome in Brad Powers. We're going to dive into some portal thoughts, some schedule breakdowns, coaching changes, a lot of different things to hit on with Brad Powers when we come back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back on the podcast and always excited to welcome in friend of the pod, friend of VSiN, friend of mine, Brad Powers, college football handicapper, joins us here on the pod. And as I said in the open, I could think of no one better to call on because I know you're already in 2026 mode. But Brad, I am curious, as we're so far away from the start of the season, what is your process? How much has your process changed over the years when it comes to handicapping and when to enter into certain markets?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of changes a little bit every year. How could it not? College football changes every year. I mean, obviously, a little bit more legwork. I mean, a little bit, probably 25-30% more work now because of the roster overhaul. Obviously, more focus on the transfer portal. What's going to be different this year is I can really dive in now because we don't have a post-spring portal. So I would say the newness of this year would be that I think I can get a better grasp at a pretty good power rating earlier, which is good, instead of, you know, oh, I got a baseline power rating, then all of a sudden a bunch of kids hit the portal post-spring, and then I got to change a lot of stuff. So I'm actually looking forward to it this year. I think I can have a pretty good power rating by April 1st. So that's going to be new. But, I mean, the process now is just, I mean, doing old school deep dives. I mean, anytime a roster's posted online, I go through it and start who's back, who isn't. You know, the thing that I'm doing now, new this year, is I'm really diving in more to the portal. How many snaps? I'm really, you know, the Indiana model, going with, you know, experience, production over potential. So maybe a few tweaks there.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next kind of question, because I'm sure you've gotten asked this even leading up to the Indiana national title, is when you look at what Indiana was able to do, you know, is that the new model? And I understand it's a little bit different. We've talked about it on the podcast, because there was a baseline of James Madison players that came in with Cignetti. So they had that kind of already built in culture, if you will. But when you look at what Indiana was able to do to turn a roster so quickly, the days of finding a 200-1, maybe, I don't know if that's going to be impossible to find, but do you think what we've seen from Indiana, Brad, potentially opens up for us bettors a more opportunity in the futures market if we do our homework and recognize, you know, to your point, what teams brought in a bunch of production via the portal?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm going to be a little skeptic. I don't know if we're going to find one, you know, 100-1, 200-1, you know, forget every year. I mean, every 5 to 10 years, I'm not sure we'll even get that. I mean, I would hope so if I had those tickets, but I'm going to use them more as the outlier than the rule. But with that being said, I mean, we are seeing teams now, a la Ohio State, went heavy production, older, wanted to get, you know, wanted to get older than anything. So I think there is going to be some teams that, you know, Texas Tech, even though they didn't win at all, they were a team, and if you followed the portal, you saw earlier, hey, that's a team that probably has the best talent in the Big 12, if we're talking this time, that the market didn't properly price. So I think there'll be a few examples, probably at least in every conference futures market, but to win it all, I don't know. I think, you know, Cignetti's just, you know, caught some lightning in a bottle here.
So let's get into more big picture portal, and then we can dive into the quarterbacks, because quarterbacks are obviously names that we all know. But I'm glad you brought up Ohio State, because this has been a program that, you know, certainly has not been afraid of going to the portal. They brought in Will Howard. They brought in Caleb Downs. They've brought in plenty of pieces via the portal. Their running backs 2 years ago for their national title team were portal guys. But what did you make of their portal haul? Per 247 Sports, it's number 5, 17 total commits. So were you overall impressed by what Ryan Day was able to bring in?
I was. Again, they went for guys that have played a lot of snaps. I just worked on them today. They're bringing in nine starters that were starting at other programs last year. And not just any other programs. Most of those guys are starting at Power 4 places. So I like what they did. Dare I say, I know they're certainly one of the national title favorites, but this is another offseason where they're kind of a little bit flying under the radar. Not a lot of people are talking about them like they should be. It's been the most consistent program in college football the last 30 years. And boy, Jeremiah Smith's back, Julian Sang's back. I questioned the Matt Patricia hire last year, but that ended up working out well. They did lose a lot on that defense. That'll be more of the question mark. They are an underdog in week 2 against Texas. You can bet that game right now, but I tend to give them the benefit of the doubt even in that game. If that one just went a tick higher, I would be more interested in Ohio State. So I think they're certainly one of the four or five teams, not, you know, breaking news here, but they're going to be probably number one in my power ratings start the season. With that being said, and we'll probably get to this later, yeah, they'll start the season probably number one in my power ratings, but you plug that number one power rating into their schedule, boy, it still might spit out 10-2 for just going off of, you know, you're taking theoretical win percentage and, you know, for each line on the game. So that's how tough the schedule is for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I want to jump right into that. So you look at week two, as you mentioned, right now FanDuel has a handful of lines up and they have Texas -2.5, juiced -115. And then you look at the rest of the schedule, and I know you tweeted out about this, and we're going to dive into some other teams and their schedule, but you're at Texas, home to Illinois, at Iowa, at Indiana, at USC, home to Oregon, and then, of course, you're going to play Michigan. And, oh, by the way, you're going to Lincoln. Not to say that Nebraska is a world beater by any stretch, but we know that's a challenging place to play. I mean, that schedule for Ohio State is one of the more challenging schedules, especially when you throw in the fact that they're going on the road to arguably the best team in the country in Texas.
Yeah, look, I grew up in Ohio. I followed, you know, obviously I'm a Notre Dame fan, but I would argue that I've followed Ohio State just as closely as Notre Dame over the years. You almost have to if you want to get along with people in this state or try to get along. I would say, and this isn't for, you know, some, you know, instant reaction, or, you know, recency bias. This is the toughest schedule Ohio State's ever had on paper entering a season.
Yeah, that's, yeah, I mean, it is, I mean, that is a loaded schedule. All right, one final thought on Ohio State. You know, obviously, we're going to get into coaching changes a little bit, but bringing in Arthur Smith, he certainly has had some ups and downs when it comes to NFL success, if you will. But he's a former NFL head coach. So you've got two former NFL head coaches as coordinators for Ohio State. What does Arthur Smith, to you, do to this offense?
Yeah, I'll say, you know, I was pessimistic about Patricia.
Yep.
That worked out beautifully. So I'm going to give, you know, Arthur Smith the benefit of the doubt, even though he's got a mixed bag of results, to say the least. I will say this, though, having a more experienced guy, play caller, should be a positive compared to it. It's not like Ryan Day's got to take over the play calling a la what he had to do last year. I don't know if Ohio State fans would want that, considering how conservative he was in the final two games. So, you know, if we're just doing a, you know, coaching upgrade or downgrade off of Heartline, obviously, if we're just talking X's and O's and experience, it's an upgrade. Recruiting, though, will be probably leave a little bit to be desired. That's something the Buckeyes do lose going forward on the recruiting trail.
So I'm looking at 247, you know, use Rivals, use On3, whatever you guys want to use, ESPN, but I'm just using 247 just for a baseline right now. When you look at these rankings for the portal, and I want to dive specifically into the quarterbacks here in just a little bit, if you just average out the star production bringing in, Notre Dame is 1, Miami is 2, Texas is 3. But then if you go into totality of points, the way that they do it, that changes a little bit. And the number one transfer portal class is LSU. They brought in 40 new players. Ole Miss is 2, Texas is 3. Brad, give us a winner or two and a loser or two in your eyes in the portal this offseason.
Yeah, winner for me is actually Texas. Not only, you know, in my opinion, best quantity and quality. You know, obviously LSU and Ole Miss had to go quantity because they lost a ton with new coaches. But boy, especially what Texas was able to do, I think that one weekend where they flipped Hollywood Smothers from Alabama. I got a really good one-two punch at running back. Had to get it because they lost their running backs. But Relique Brown from Arizona State, a 1,300-yard rusher. Smothers, that's great. Also, Cam Coleman, the best wide receiver in the portal. 5-star kid. I thought they got maybe the best linebacker in the portal, the Biles kid from Pitt. So, and then they also probably overpaid, but it was a position of need, the offensive lineman from Wake Forest. Love what they did. Again, if you're going off of, you know, production, they welcome in 12 guys who are full-time starters on last year's team. So if you're going back to the first question you asked me, returning experience has always been like that starting point for me. But now I have to break it apart. Okay, here's what they have coming back from last year's team. Here's how the amount of experience they're bringing in via the portal. I think Texas brings 10 starters back from last year's team, but bring in 12 additional starters from other teams. So they're one of the most experienced teams in the country and a deserved top 2-3 favorite to win it all.
Well, real quickly on Texas, you know, I wasn't really planning on doing coordinator changes, but when you're at high profile teams like this, you know, I think the overall was a little surprising that Kwiatkowski got booted, but they bring back Will Muschamp, which is kind of hilarious to bring in the former head coach to be the D coordinator. Is that an upgrade in your eyes?
I don't know enough yet, because I was surprised, and a lot of people were. At that point, I was perusing all the boards, or at least the top teams in college football, and that came out of nowhere. Maybe a slight upgrade, but Texas defense has not been the problem. Obviously, you know, I thought Arch got a little bit over, you know, hyped, to say the least, coming into last year. And boy, sometimes, you know, Sark is a great offensive play caller, but man, he gets a little too cute, in my opinion, at some point. So I wasn't looking at Texas thinking, you know, defense is what's holding them back from winning at all. So, you know, you can't argue with Muschamp as a DC. I think more importantly, it's probably a little bit of a loss to Georgia. If you've been following along with them, he was kind of like that consigliere for Kirby Smart for a few years. He stepped away last year. And there was you could see it, some parts on that side of the ball for Georgia a little bit. So that's how I'm viewing it. More of a loss from Georgia the last couple of years is more of a positive for Texas.
Is there a team that jumps out to you based off of what they lost and then brought in, or what they brought in lack thereof, if you will, that is going to get hit, was hit pretty hard in the portal in your eyes?
I'm concerned about the Crimson Tide.
Okay.
They lost, not that they lost a lot of quality, but they did lose a lot of guys that were starters for them. And now maybe you say addition by subtraction, but, you look at where a lot of their guys went, where we're talking, I'll just use one position alone, defensive lineman. Two went to Ohio State, one went to Notre Dame. All three guys are expected to be in the rotation at those two schools that are national title contenders. So, that would be one school that I'm pretty worried about moving forward, where I just don't think this was a 2-year adjustment for their head coach. I definitely think this is a program on the downswing. Not that they're all of a sudden going to be a mediocre 6-6 program, but I think 8-4 is a new reality compared to 11-1, 12-0.
Yeah, when Isaiah Horton hit the portal too, that was a pretty big eye-opener, because he had been playing so well. He goes to Texas A&M. So, yeah, there's no doubt regarding Alabama.
And again, getting outbid by Texas. You know, they think they get Hollywood Smothers, boom, bang, they don't. I mean, moving forward, I mean, the reality is when everybody can pay some, pay players, at least legally, Alabama does not have the money as a Texas or Ohio State or a Notre Dame. They just don't.
Yeah, the Saban tax, or Saban savings, is a better way to put it. That's real. It certainly feels like, right, Brad?
Yeah, I think some people call it the discount to stay there because you knew you were getting to the NFL.
Yeah.
But that's gone. A lot of things are gone there. There's like a mental toughness gone from them. I think they're a little soft, certainly at the line of scrimmage. That Indiana game was a multitude of games. Maybe I'm still a little upset that the fact that, you know, that they got into the playoff when you knew that they were relatively mediocre. Still upset that they get still ranked in the top 10 after getting their brains beat in two of their last three games. They're still getting the Saban benefited out, at least from the pollsters. I'm here to tell you, with the eye test and whether it's recruiting, whether it's, you know, the portal, they're just not the same program as what they were just even 2 years ago.
Let's dive into some quarterbacks and the movement there, and we'll kind of do, you know, upgrade or downgrade from what they had. So we'll start with Miami. I'm curious your answer on this one. So Carson Beck obviously exhausts his eligibility. Miami tried with a couple other people, got a little shady, but regardless, it is Darian Mensah who will be the guy. Is this an upgrade or a downgrade or status quo at the quarterback position?
Yeah, good question. I'm going to go status quo for now, a cop out. I mean, obviously it gives him a little bit more mobility. I thought Carson Beck played well. I mean, for most of the season, obviously the two losses in the regular season, he was pathetic, and they protected him a little bit in a few of the playoff games. But Mensah can be a turnover, a little bit more turnovers than what I'd like to see from that position. So I'll just say status quo for now. If you really want to get me into it, I'd probably say slight downgrade.
Yeah, Barkate coming in, and they had a really good connection. Obviously, still got Malachi Toney. Fletcher's still there, right?
Yeah, Fletcher's back.
They got some dudes. I mean, Miami's not going anywhere. That's for sure. Obviously, I know the answer to this. It is a downgrade to go from Mendoza to anybody. He's going to be the number one pick. He's the Heisman Trophy winner. But what do you make of the fit of Josh Hoover going to Indiana from TCU?
Yeah, downgrade, but not, I'm not going to say huge downgrade. And what will, oh my God, what will poor little Indiana do? I mean, the reality is, in the last 8 years that Cignetti has coached, and we're talking back to his James Madison days, he's had six different quarterbacks have a first or second team all-conference performance. Many of those players, went on to be, offensive conference player of the year. I think 7 out of the 8 years he had a first or second team, 6 different quarterbacks. So it's not like he had 2 full, 3-4 year type starters. So whatever he does at that, his offensive system, very quarterback friendly. And I think Hoover's a great fit. Obviously, no one in the portal does a better job as far as scouting. And again, going with production over potential than obviously, Cignetti. And Hoover's a multiple year starter, very productive. I'll say this, he'll have his best year as a starting quarterback this year at Indiana.
Yeah, I was curious about it because, you're going to see rankings come out and it's great offseason fodder. And, Ari Wasserman's a friend of the show. And I saw him put him at number 5 in his top 10. And I'm not trying to crap on anyone's rankings, but my curiosity is the turnovers. He had 24 interceptions the last 2 years, but you're now going to a place that has Becker at wide receiver, who is emerging to catch everything thrown his way. They go and they get Nick Marsh.
Yeah.
I think I know the answer, but you think the number of turnovers certainly cuts down, you would imagine, at Indiana.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just a different offensive system. TCU's more of he can be a little bit more of a gunslinger. I don't know if Cignetti will tolerate that.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
Well, I think what Mendoza told the story that, week one, he threw a pick and they were like, hey, you don't have to do everything here. We're going to be okay. And I think that mindset probably.
Yeah, it's
over.
Not like Mendoza was a world beater coming into there.
No, I know.
He wasn't. I mean, he was a guy that was a little shaky at Cal. So I'll say this. I think Hoover's coming over from TCU with a little bit more production than what Mendoza showed at Cal. So. Boy, if he could do anywhere near what Mendoza was able to do, I mean, Indiana's a clear-cut national title contender again. I can't believe I'm saying this. It's not a fluke. They're right there in the mix again.
Well, it's just funny when you think back to the offseason. I think most of us were like, yeah, they're not going to drop off. This isn't a fluke that they made the playoff. And then they become the best team in college football. Like, oh, shit. Oh, this is not a fluke that they're the best team in college football. And this dude is on another level. What do you make of the fit in LSU with Sam Leavitt and Lane Kiffin here? It's hard to say upgrade, downgrade, because it's a whole different coaching staff and all of that. But, Charlie Weiss Jr. certainly got a lot of credit for what he was able to do postseason as well. What do you think about Leavitt going to Baton Rouge?
Yeah, I think it's an upgrade over Nussmeier, provided a big caveat here and a big if, provided Leavitt's healthy. I've heard some things that maybe he's not as healthy as what they would have liked to been. I've heard, Kiffin, he wasn't Kiffin's number one choice. There might have been a few others, the Washington quarterback, rumors
say,
there.
Damon Williams.
Yeah, might have been his number one guy. So I'm a little concerned. Also, I've heard from reliable sources that might have been a locker room, a little bit issue there at Arizona State. So that'd worry me. But with that being said, provided he's healthy, provided he, doesn't have a locker room problem, obviously he's more mobile than Nussmeier. Nussmeier had an extremely disappointing season. So, I upgrade that quarterback for LSU. Even if it's not Leavitt, I mean, they also did a good job getting 2 other guys in the portal at quarterback.
Well, it's funny, just switching gears real quickly to Arizona State. They surprised me, and I'm curious about them. Obviously the big boy in the Big 12 is going to be Texas Tech, and we're going to get to their schedule here in just a moment. But they go out and they get Cutter Bowley from Kentucky and Mikey Keen. It's like, okay, you got a veteran to Mikey Keen. But they went out and they got 2 stud wide receivers. I really like the kid Reed Harris they got from Boston College. So are you intrigued by Kenny Dillingham and what he did in the portal this year?
I am. I can't believe. How do you handle all these sports? I can't believe you're on top of Arizona State having a surprising portal class. I would agree. If you were to give me 2 or 3 teams that had a surprising class that maybe the market doesn't price accordingly, at least early on, would be Arizona State would be one. I don't have to get too creative to think that they might be the second best team in the Big 12. obviously, we'll talk Texas Tech. They're going to be the best entering the season. But I really like what they did. Maybe people didn't see it. You know, him, you know, obviously there was some flirtation there with Michigan. But obviously the press conference that he had was, you know, asking for people to step up in the community. I don't know who that is, but judging from what they were able to do in the portal, somebody gave them some extra money because they went out and had a really nice portal class.
Yeah, I was bummed to see Reed Harris. I was talking about him as, you know, us being Notre Dame guys, and I would love Reed Harris to come in.
Not happy with the Ohio State kids?
Well, we'll get to that. I am curious your thoughts because you know that roster inside and out. But sticking with quarterbacks, you know, Austin Simmons goes to Missouri. Byron Brown obviously follows his head coach to Auburn. Sorsby goes to Texas Tech. Mestemaker, you know, that's a good coup that they were able to bring him to Oklahoma State with that coaching staff. Lagway goes to Baylor. You know, I guess two or three intriguing landing spots for you from the quarterback position?
Sorsby to Tech, because yeah. I think, you know, I'm not a huge Sorsby guy, but I think that's an upgrade for him, because I don't think much of Satterfield as a coach. And it's also an upgrade for Tech. It was very glaring that their weakness come playoff time against Oregon was quarterback. Had they had a better quarterback, I don't know if he makes up for all the difference there, but that they've certainly been a lot closer in that game. So them upgrading a quarterback tells me that they're the slam dunk favorite again in the Big 12. Another great portal class for them. So that would be the one that I think's probably the home run of the bunch.
I want to get to Penn State as it's going to be Ames East, I guess. Ames College, I don't know, however you want to do it there. Some of the other coaching changes, but let's do this. Let's take a quick break. More with Brad Powers on the other side.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and you could follow Brad on Twitter at BradPowers7. He has a couple tweets that I want to get to regarding schedules and all of that, but you know, we were just talking quarterbacks. Rocco Becht, a guy with a ton of production over his career, he goes to State College with Matt Campbell, and you know, it's funny, the process was very clunky, but ultimately, I think they landed with a decent coach and Matt Campbell. What are you expecting from Penn State this year? And a lot of that also, as you tweeted out, may have to do with the schedule. They got a pretty fortunate draw from the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with he was able to bring over a ton of guys from Iowa State. You know, not that that moves the needle considerably for me in the big picture nationally, but at least gives them a baseline where they're not going to tank. And speaking of, maybe people thought that they tanked this past year, you know, only getting the 7 wins. But I mean, I got to tell you, the way they finished up, that they finished in the top 20 of my power ratings. I mean, very quietly, Penn State was playing like even better than top 20, borderline top 10 team down the stretch. If you look at their performance against Indiana, had a really good first half against Ohio State, obviously only lost by Iowa on the road at 1, crushed Nebraska, beat Clemson, you name it down the stretch. I mean, they're playing really good ball. So there's at least a little bit of a base there that they keep the interim. I think that was key to the locker room presence there. Not a huge Matt Campbell fan, especially with the added expectations.
Yeah.
But I'll say this, expectations are deserved this year because Penn State has as easy of a Big Ten, probably the easiest Big Ten schedule and one of the easiest Power Four schedules that there are. I don't have to get too creative to see them being favored in 10 games. Somebody asked me to show a couple weeks ago, you know, obviously Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon, three teams that are very likely to make the playoff. Mm-hmm. Who's the fourth team in the Big Ten? I got to go with Penn State. Even more talented rosters. Michigan's more talented. SC's more talented. But man, Penn State's schedule leads me to believe that this should be a 10-2 type team, and a 10-2 Big Ten team is getting into the playoffs.
What do you make of Michigan this year with Kyle Whittingham?
Yeah, good question. I mean, considering how much of a bum Moore was, it's hard not to be an upgrade over him. A significant upgrade, may I add. But again, schedule. If you look at their schedule, boy, I did, with the win total not out there yet, I have a feeling that I'm going to be on the under on Michigan this year. I think it's, you know, a good higher as far as keeping it stable for a couple of years. But when I'm making a hire personally, I'm not looking for a 2 or 3 year plan or even a 5 year plan. I would say 5 years would be the absolute best maxed out effort. If you get 5 great years from Winningham, that's your best case scenario. When I'm making a hire, I'm not doing that. I'm looking for 10, 15 years. I know that's unrealistic in today's market and climate, but I'm not wild about the hire. I didn't think they did that great in the portal. I don't want to say this on a public, I'll say it, 7-5, 8-4. I'm pretty down on Michigan.
Producer Wyatt Tomczyk is very angry right now. He's mad at you. He's mad at you, Brad, that you dare go against his maize and blue. Were you surprised that they stuck with Bryce Underwood? I don't know all the financials and you know, apparently you could get out of any contract in college football, so it doesn't matter. But when I watched, I was at the, I did sidelines for the Vegas Bowl, and I thought Devin Dampier might have played his best game of his career in that game. And I was like, this is what I thought Utah would be getting. Beck goes to Utah with Whittingham. I just assumed that Dampier would go with him as well. What do you make of Beck with Bryce Underwood as an OC quarterback tandem?
I mean, if you hear the rumors, Whittingham, I think, was on a podcast with Urban Meyer, said that he didn't even have a quarterback coach last year. So that's why you didn't see any progression from Underwood. He basically looked like he looked in the opener against New Mexico, even though he had a full year of starting. So, yeah, he's going to be much better. I still question what they have at wide receiver and some of the talent surrounding him at the skill position. And again, he's going to be up against it in the schedule, starting with Oklahoma and Venables. Very confusing defense that had him totally confused last year. We'll see, you know, week two. I mean, at least it's at home, but he'll be better, but has to be better. Again, I think Michigan would be a better team this year with a worse record.
Michigan 1.5-point favorite right now at FanDuel in the look ahead here for that Oklahoma game. What do we do with Ole Miss with this Trinidad Chambliss situation brewing? You know, obviously we saw Alabama from a basketball standpoint with the Bediako. He got to play a couple of games and now he's got to be shelved. Can you do anything right now with Ole Miss? You know, I mean, we still have time, right? It's not up against it with the season, but what's your read on the Trinidad Chambliss situation down there?
Yeah, I would say I'd be pessimistic, but I mean, when's the last time the NCAA won a court case if it gets there? So obviously we're talking about changing a team's power rating 5-6 points.
Yeah.
So unless I get that has inside info, I get that text that says, yeah, he's going to play or he's definitely out. I'm in a holding pattern because everything is dependent on that. I want to be, though, me personally, I want to be a seller of Ole Miss. I'm not a fan. I know you're going to ask me about new coaches. I'm not a fan of the Pete Golding hire. I know they had a great win against Georgia, but I think this is going to be, especially if Chambliss can't play, this can be a total dumpster fire as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, and I think Charlie Weiss Jr. deserves a lot of credit. Yes. That offense was humming, right? A lot of that staff has moved on to LSU. So let's get into it. Maybe that's your answer. Let's start with the negative side first. Coaching hires that you did not like in this cycle.
Yeah, Pete Golding would be number one. I know they're up against it and had to do something, but that would be number one. Boy, you know, I don't want to be too negative. I think there's quite a few that are just like ho-hum. I'll say this. I don't like the Arkansas hire because I'm just not a big fan of Silverfield at Memphis. So not that Pittman was that great. I don't know if it's a huge downgrade from Pittman. That's why I'm kind of like meandering on that one. But I think Silverfield's one of the most overrated coaches in the country. So that one is not going to work out. They'll be firing him in like 3 years.
Yeah, I would agree. For us to maybe get old takes exposed when Arkansas wins the national title in 3 or 4 years.
They're not.
When the Walton money comes in and gives them unlimited funds or whatever. But yeah, that was a very, in my opinion, uninspiring hire. So I would agree with that. I mean, you know this, but maybe our listeners don't. Memphis was by far the best funded AAC program. Yes. And they were mediocre at best in that conference. So coaches that you think will have an immediate impact this year.
I like Bob Chesney at UCLA. I've always liked Bob Chesney. They are another team. You mentioned Arizona State. If you need another team that quietly had a good portal, UCLA. One of their bigger alums reached out to me and said, because I was like, why would Chesney go to UCLA? I don't know. What's his career path there? Right. I was questioning it because they shouldn't be in the Big Ten. They're moving out of the Rose Bowl. I just don't know what the future is. And he said to me, no, they're looking to invest, not only in, you know, obviously getting Chesney, but they're going to invest in the roster. And he proved to be correct because they went out and got a lot of guys. So I think he quietly, I mean, considering what they had on the coaching staff the last year plus, that's going to be a major upgrade. So that's one that I like. I'll keep it, you know, local, even though they're the arch rival. I like what Toledo did. I love that Mercer coach. Somebody reached out to me last year when BG was looking to make a hire. That was the guy that I thought that BG should have hired. They ended up with Eddie George, a big name, but I keep an eye on that one. Maybe not for 26, but in the future, I think Toledo kind of secretly upgraded. I know some people that don't pay attention to the sport, like Jason Candle. I don't. So that was a major upgrade for Toledo.
Yeah, Toledo, I remember when UConn hired Jason Cannon, I'm like, ooh, this is not a good hire. This is, we'll see how this.
Yeah, Connecticut people think it's great. It's not.
I'm curious, too, like, what does Jim Mora Jr. do at Colorado State? I mean,
I like that hire. Colorado State secretly can spend money. You go look at their recruiting and their portal class, even with, you know, first year. They signed one of the better classes, I think, in the 70s. Which is good for a program like that. They built, you know, in the last decade, they built a $220 million brand new stadium. They want to spend money. So he's a major upgrade. They're going to be a major player.
Yeah, I was talking to my buddy Mike Sanford, who's now coaching high school football in the Denver area. And I think Jim Mora's doing his best to just kind of try to make inroads. Not that there's a ton of talent in the Denver area, but just make those inroads. And who knows what the other big institution in that state is going to look like in the near future. So we will see. All right. As we wrap things up here with Brad, and I'm sure we'll have him on a couple of times throughout the offseason, but you mentioned it. It's 30 minutes in. I think this has well exceeded our statutes. We're allowed to talk some Notre Dame now. We'll start with the portal. What did you make? It was a small class, and you mentioned production versus potential. And Notre Dame over years, for those who don't know, have had a really challenging time getting undergraduate transfers in. Well, this year, they were able to get some undergraduate transfers, and it felt like, for the most part, Brad, they went with potential overproduction. So what did you make of the small but maybe impactful portal class for Notre Dame?
Yeah, I mean, myself included, we're probably overreacting when they're sitting at zero transfer portal commits, a week and a half into the portal. I mean, very worried. They finished about as well as you could have hoped. You mentioned, I mean, I think it's a nice balance between production and potential. I mean, I think the Brew kid from I think it's actually pronounced Brew, isn't it?
Even it though is Brew, yeah.
Yeah, Brew from Pitt. Great defensive lineman who has
production
there.
Anytime you
can
take anything
there.
From Narduzzi, too, I'm in.
I love that. So the potential guys, Keeley from Alabama on the defensive front, the two wide receivers from the Buckeyes. Hey, if the Ohio State like them, come on out of high school at wide receiver, Hartline. I think the one of the two will be big-time impact, if not both of them this year. So I like that. They didn't have a ton of needs and holes because they retained almost their entire defense. Top nine guys as far as snap counts are back. That's probably the most experienced defense in all of college football. I would, you know, I'm greedy, so I'd have liked them to maybe get a player or two more. But I mean, it's as good as, if you're just talking quality, average, if you believe in the stars, it's as good as any transfer portal class that there is. I think more importantly, you mentioned the undergrad. That's the big change. I mean, Notre Dame's been almost 90%+ of their transfers in the last 10 years have been grad transfers. Mm-hmm. Now, I think they only signed one grad transfer out of this class. They're all undergrads. So that's the big shift. And it tells me that with what they have coming in, high school recruiting and this portal class tells me that there are no really restrictions at Notre Dame right now. The chips are all in on the table. They got to win the national championship. And then right now, they're obviously the co-favorite to win it.
With that schedule, what are you looking to potentially do with Notre Dame? Right now, they'll be a favorite in every game, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because their toughest games are at BYU
and they'll be a touchdown favorite. Yeah, touchdown favorite against Miami. Yeah, BYU, I guess maybe I'd still have them favored by like 10.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's their two toughest games. SMU game could maybe be tricky. Maybe the opener, I see everyone's betting Wisconsin already. I won't be. You know me, I'm Mr. Negative Notre Dame. I hope people continue to bet Wisconsin in that game. Hey, look, I mean, as negative as I, you know, I get made to be a very, you know, negative Notre Dame fan, I bet him to win the title last 2 years. You know, went to the title game 2 years ago, last year, should have been in the playoff. They finished as my third best team power ratings wise in the country. First bet I made again this year, Notre Dame 10-1 to win the title. I just think if you, and I look, I remove all biases. I'm just looking, I think they should be the favorite. When you look at what's coming back, what's coming in as far as the portal and recruiting, and again, Notre Dame could never recruit five stars. Now they got four of them all of a sudden coming in one class. And then you put that power rating into a schedule, they should be the national title favorite. I mean, it's, they're going to have the highest win total them in Texas Tech. I mean, if they don't, I'm betting over.
What? How big? I mean, the drop off is big because Jeremiah Love is a generational running back that Notre Dame really has almost never had. You lose Jadarian Price too, but you know Aeneas Williams showed flashes in the playoff 2 years ago. How big of a drop off is that? Because I think one concern is CJ Carr, when in doubt, got the hand it to two NFL running backs. How concerning is the running back room for you?
I mean, obviously it's a concern, the biggest probably concern on the team, but I mean, come on, the running back position, I mean, it's devalued, even going from the greatest of the great to, you know, let's just say an average power four starter, which I think Williams would be above average.
Yeah.
I think Nolan James is a name to know. Kedron Young is a name to know, provided he's healthy. I'm not that worried. I mean, look, they were able to, people forget, Jeremiah Love, you know, had the big run against Indiana in the playoff 2 years ago. And then after that, I mean, he was pretty much had the big 2 yard run against Penn State, but that was it. I mean, he was pretty much a non-factor in that playoff run. Aeneas Williams has as many instant impact plays as he did in the Penn State game. So I think Williams would be fine. They don't have a game changer at that position, but I'm not sure that they need one. They got an experienced quarterback for the first time, it feels like, in ages, a returning quarterback, and they got as much talent as wide receivers what they've had. I'm not that worried.
All right, a couple more teams I just want to hit on before letting you run. Texas Tech, you mentioned them. Their schedule is, whoo, man, that is something. No Utah, no BYU, I believe. What do you make of Texas Tech? How much have they improved from last year's squad?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are, and deservedly so, are going to knock Notre Dame's schedule, and it is weak, but weaker is Texas Tech. It's among, if not the weakest, you know, bottom five schedule when it comes to the Power Four. They are slam dunk the favorite in the Big 12. I got to, you know, go through their entire roster. I'm worried about some of the losses up front of the defensive line, but they did a really good job in the portal again, getting a couple studs in the defensive line. I just think that, you know, they upgraded at the most important position, quarterback. They have the schedule. This team's in the playoff again, as far as I'm concerned.
Brad, before last one from me, you put out teams to maybe just keep an eye on for regression or for either positive and negative. So you tweeted this out, teams that had a bunch of close wins and a bunch of close losses. Who are a couple teams that maybe you see either positive or negative regression coming?
Yeah, I mean, positive regression, I'll be, you know, some teams with some first-year coaches. I mean, Arkansas was a team that finished 2-10, but I mean, they still finished like 35th in my power ratings. I mean, for a while there, the Notre Dame result, they lost by more points to Notre Dame than they did like their first seven losses in the SEC combined. So even though I don't like Silverfield, they'll probably get some positive luck in a few games. They'll double their win total. Auburn's another team that had a very tough luck season. Again, even with a first-year coach, I expect them to have a little bit more positive luck. This is just meat and potatoes, basic stuff. Penn State should be a little bit you know, more fortunate this year. Team that probably be a little bit less fortunate. You know, I think people forget, as dominant as Indiana was for a couple of them playoff games, very fortunate to beat Iowa. I think people forget about that one. Really fortunate to beat Penn State. I don't know if Indiana is going to be as fortunate this year.
Yeah, didn't they not lose a fumble for like 13 straight games?
I mean, you can get some of that's coachable, teachable, you know, the 3 points and all that on the football, but it's still, you know, it's not round, it's oblong, the ball bouncing your way. I just don't expect it again this year from Indiana.
Brad, you're the man. Glad that you're the first postseason guest that we had, and I'm sure we'll be calling on you as the as we get closer and closer. 199 days, Brad, till week zero. Start the countdown now.
Thanks for having me.
There he is, Brad Powers. One more break. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, wrapping things up, it is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Once again, I will do my best, but if you do have some guest recommendations, we did this last offseason. We had a couple of guests that I hadn't had on before, so if you have some guest recommendations, you can hit us up in the reviews on iTunes. If you want to hit us with a five-star review, much appreciated there. But you could also email us, cfbpod@vsin.com. So Brad Powers, guest number one. I'm sure we'll have Brad on again. We'll have the usuals on as we always do. But new voices, always great. Maybe we'll get some prominent college football voices now that we're on for an extra 3 months this offseason. So the goal to have an episode with you every week on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, etc. Continue to hit us up with the subscriptions and hit us up with the follow on YouTube. So just kind of wrapping things up here on the pod, I did want to make note of this. And as you know, as you could see, if you're watching with us, of course, got the Hawaii helmet over the shoulder. We are pro bows here on this podcast. And the Mountain West, you know, give them credit. You know, it's the Pac-12 Mountain West divorce was clunky at best. I hate it, to be honest. The fact that, you know, Boise State and San Diego State, Colorado State, all going to the Pac-12. It feels like neither conference is getting better, right? If they had just kind of stayed together and moved out that way. But regardless, it is what it is. That's the nature of the beast. But to have North Dakota State go into the Mountain West, I thought was a huge coup for the conference. And, you know, once their numbers come out, it'll be a fun discussion this offseason to see what we should expect from North Dakota State from a win total standpoint when we see that schedule and what it looks like. I was just talking to producer Wyatt about it. It's not like Hawaii going to North Dakota State is going to be an elements type game. They play in a dome, the Fargo Dome, but I'm wildly curious to see what North Dakota State will look like in their first year. It will not be a massive drop off. Is it going to be James Madison-esque? I mean, I don't know. Kirk Cignetti was the head coach of James Madison when they went from the FCS to the FBS. So now we know they were pretty elite from a coaching standpoint there. How about Sunbelt Billy, by the way, going to James Madison? Our boy is back in the Sunbelt. So he's going to live up to the name Sunbelt Billy this year at James Madison. But I love that addition for the Mountain West. And it's happening right away. You know, it's not one of those changes where, okay, this is happening in 3 years or 4 years. No, this year, North Dakota State will be in the Mountain West for football. Also, UTEP and NIU. So you will have Hawaii NIU in your life. You will have North Dakota State versus UTEP in your life. Things you never knew you needed, but that is what we have. But for all the realignment that is annoying and I think at times stupid, I love this for the FBS. I know FCS folks probably don't love it. There were some great rivalries in the FCS level with North Dakota State, but I do not anticipate this to be a cellar dweller. That is for sure. Could they actually be maybe a little bit overrated because of their history in the FCS and their success that they've had against FBS foes? But curious to see what that schedule ultimately looks like. All right. One other transfer I just wanted to touch on, and I think we'll do like conference by conference as the months go on. Oklahoma State, you know, they go out and they bring in Eric Morris from North Texas and Drew Mestemaker going to the Pokes, a team that lost their last 11 games of the year. Oklahoma State's going to be a team that I am going to be fascinated by what they look like in 2026 when you've got a clear upgrade at the coaching position. You open up the season against Tulsa, team they lost to a year ago. Then you host Oregon, so you'll be a pretty significant home underdog there. And then you've got Murray State and West Virginia to round out the month of September. You know, could you be looking at a strong start to the season for the Pokes? Oklahoma State, are they a team that bounces back and goes from 1-11 to bowl eligible or over their win total? So once again, these are all of the things we're going to be starting to concoct and put together and looking to build our portfolio for win totals. As of right now, no real win totals are out. I think FanDuel has maybe three up. FanDuel, by the way, does have week zero and week one lines up. And it was alluded to by Brad Powers. Wisconsin, Notre Dame, this is a Lambeau Field game. Right now, the number 16.5. Believe our guy Duck over at Action Network took the 19.5 with Wisconsin. So one of the many games already up. All right, that's going to do it for this installment of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Good to be back. Just a reminder, we're hoping to be with you each and every week moving forward. Thanks to producer Wyatt. Thanks to Ryan, our producer, as well. I'm Tim Murray. We're back, baby. The VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.